Hello, I'm Chris Cetullo, and this is That's History, our regular segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and resonance from the past. I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here, as always.
All right, so it's pretty hard to watch the news, listen to the news, read the news without seeing tons of information about the Ebola virus these days. And some of the news is rhetoric about closing the borders to immigrants. And as you look at it as a historian, you see a lot of echoes of times past and rhetoric past.
Very much so. I was playing tennis a week ago, and in the court next to me, I was eavesdropping on the conversation, and I heard one guy say to the other, look, we can stop Ebola. All we have to do is prevent people from coming here from Africa. And as a historian, of course, that was extremely familiar to me because so much of our rhetoric about immigration and immigration control has been tied up with disease and the threat of disease. If you go back to the 1840s and the first cholera epidemics, it was thought that Irish people were bringing cholera, which occasionally they did, but so did many other people. And yet, of course, the Irish are saddled with that. And then when you get smallpox in the 1860s, the Chinese are accused of that. They're also accused of spreading plague. Then the Jews are accused of spreading tuberculosis, and the Italians accused of spreading typhoid. So we've been down this road.
Right. And how do these associations with a particular disease happen? Is it just random, or do people seize on one little factoid and extrapolate?
Well, more the latter. I mean, you know, every stereotype is an element of truth. That's how it becomes a stereotype. So, you know, there were tubercular Jews who, you know, in the shtetl, the ghetto where they lived, had contracted tuberculosis and brought it here. So that wasn't false. What's false, of course, is the idea that every Jew carries tuberculosis. It's just that a couple of cases were used to, well, extrapolate to the norm.
Now, today, when we look at the Ebola virus and the panic about the idea of people from Africa coming over here, there is a pretty strong surge of counterinformation from public health officials, from the news media. First, trying to make the simple basic distinction that Africa is a huge continent and we're talking about only one corner of it where the Ebola virus is a problem, but also just more generally trying to explain, you know, what the virus is and how it's actually transmitted. During these other periods, during the 1800s, the early 1900s, was there the same kind of counter information being spread, or did a lot of these stereotypes and accusations pass unchallenged?
Well, I'd go farther than that. I would say that, unfortunately, in many cases, it was actually government officials who were spreading the misinformation.
Ah.
Take the case of the Chinese and the plague. So in 1900 in San Francisco, it's discovered that a single Chinese man has the plague. And what happened immediately after that is Chinatown, a 15-block area, was quarantined, 25,000 people, and they started to build a wall, a wooden wall around it, despite the fact that at least some health officials were pointing out that it really wasn't an epidemic. It couldn't be spread in the way that people were saying, but there were enough people in San Francisco and municipal government that were behind this that not only did they essentially wall off Chinatown, but they also passed regulations saying that if you're Chinese or Japanese, you couldn't go on the railroad unless you could show proof that you had had this inoculation, which, by the way, was extremely primitive and largely untested. The Chinese and Japanese part is interesting, too, because, of course, there was no Japanese plague, but it gives you a sense of the way that race worked in all of this. And again, the way that public health officials embraced race as a marker for disease.
One of the issues that's causing a great deal of controversy and coverage right now is the issue of quarantine. We have the nurse up in Maine resisting quarantine.
Bike riding with her boyfriend.
Right, and yeah. Ordering pizza. But was quarantine a factor in all these different sort of waves of immigration and waves of concern about disease? And did that evolve at all? Did any better understanding of where quarantine was justified and where it was not ever occur?
Absolutely. So in the 1890s, you have a quarantine of largely Jewish immigrants in New York because of several disease threats. And again, some of them were carriers, but the others weren't. And I think there was a recognition after that, and also after the quarantine of Chinatown, which was an enormous mistake, there was a recognition that these blanket prohibitions aren't simply racist, but they were unscientific. They weren't getting us to the place where we want to go. And I think quarantine has evolved in very salutary ways. So there are now quarantine laws about TB. You know, if somebody comes here with TB, they can be quarantined, but you need a court order in the same way that you need a court order in order to wiretap somebody, right? You've got to get a judge to affirm that this person really is a carrier and this person really does represent a threat because of their disease, not because of who they are.
Chris Sutula here. We're talking with Jonathan Zimmerman about the current news of the Ebola virus and the examples through history of other times when there were panics over disease that led to discrimination against immigrants and to quarantine. I'm sensing a pattern here, Jonathan, in what you're saying, that one could say that we've actually made progress, that despite some of the sort of forehead-slapping, eye-rolling things that have happened around Ebola and news coverage, that we're actually handling this a little better maybe than the 19th century America did.
Absolutely. And we're handling it better than we did HIV. I mean, let's remember that in the wake of HIV, there were four H's that were said to be in risk groups. That would be heroin user, homosexuals, hemophiliacs, and yes, Haitians. Mm-hmm. But Haitians were the only group defined by who they were, not what they did, right? The other three categories, they're behaviors that we know could promote HIV acquisition. In the case of the Haitians, there weren't, so people started to invent them. They said they were engaging in voodoo and even drinking blood. And this went on for 2 years until the CDC removed Haitians from the risk group. So I would say, in response to your question, we've made enormous progress. I mean, yes, there has been some discrimination and nasty remarks made against West Africans. But I would say, by and large, despite some missteps, we've showed up pretty well this time.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University and our regular correspondent on segments of That's History. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was good to talk.